On the feature today, a Western Canadian conservative icon, Ted Byfield, on, among other things, the federal conservative leadership race.
Fiscal conservatives seem to think that they're not dealing with moral questions, they're dealing with practical facts. And then in the next breath they say, why do people so easily involve themselves in these enormous debts? We shouldn't be doing that. That word shouldn't means morality, because using your head and being wise with money is a virtue. Now, if you discredit all the social virtues, because they don't matter anymore, don't be surprised when all the fiscal virtues disappear as well, because they're all standing on the same ground.
In the news, Saskatchewan threatens to invoke the notwithstanding clause on a court ruling involving Catholic education. More inappropriate content on a government-approved education website in Alberta. And the first ever God and Government Youth Conference kicks off in Ottawa today.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
Saskatchewan Premier Brad Wall is threatening to invoke the Constitution's notwithstanding clause to counter a recent court decision on Catholic education in his province. That notwithstanding clause allows governments to override court rulings that find certain laws or government practices unconstitutional. The notion is that notwithstanding those court rulings, those laws or practices can remain in place. ARPA education consultant Harry Mose has been watching this case closely. He says there's a fair bit of history here.
It actually dates back to 2003. There was a closure of a small elementary school in the village of Theodore, and then a Catholic school decided to open up. And of course, you know that in Saskatchewan, Catholic schools are fully funded, and the vast majority of these students then decided to enroll in the Catholic school. The public school officials were not amused by this. They really felt that these parents just transferring their allegiance from the public school to the Catholic school that just happened to open up was not really in sync with the raison d'etre of why Catholic schools should be established.
The court ruling on the case is complicated, Bose says, but the central thrust is worrisome.
The actual ruling is 238 pages long, and I think it would do us prudence to indeed read that ruling a little bit more carefully, which I have not done. However, I think what the ruling is saying is that the intent of funding for faith-based schools was to provide education for the children of faith-based parents, and that really is not happening here in Saskatchewan. By making this ruling, of course, it could have a ripple effect for all faith-based schools in Saskatchewan, or perhaps all faith-based schools across this country.
And that's why Brad Wall has threatened to invoke the notwithstanding clause. However, Mose says that actually may not be the best way to go about this.
The reason why I have some caution is because the judge did have a stay of a minimum of 1 year, and perhaps could be extended, where schools perhaps could review all of this. I personally think the Catholic School Board should appeal this decision, and I feel that they would be successful, and that would be the better way to go rather than to invoke the notwithstanding clause.
No word on when the government will make a final decision on invoking that constitutional provision. More inappropriate content has surfaced on a website that the Alberta government's been recommending to students struggling with issues of sexual identity and expression. Teresa Eng with the Informed Albertans blog uncovered a whole slew of inappropriate links a few months ago, and the government took them down. But last week, another link surfaced. This one entitled Sex from A to Z, kind of an electronic set of alphabet flashcards, but with extremely graphic descriptors for each of the letters of the alphabet.
When I first wrote my blog article in the middle of March, talking about the sexually graphic material that I had found, I actually didn't find these A to Z cards. It was actually somebody else afterwards that found them and sent them to me and said, "Did you see these?" And I was shocked. They are very inappropriate, especially for kids. Basically, even just the couple that I highlighted talk about the promotion of pornography. They talk about promoting these anonymous sexual encounters, and it's very inappropriate.
While there is no longer any direct online link from Alberta Education's website to this material, Eng says the government continues to recommend the organizations that are behind it as essentially appropriate resources for students. And that, she says, continues to raise some fundamental questions.
The Institute for Sexual Minority Studies and Services actually shares a director of ISMIS, is the same individual who's the director of the CHU Project, Comprehensive Health Education Workers Project, who has posted these A to Z cards on their website. So why are these people who are putting these very inappropriate materials on their resource page providing services in our K-12 schools for kids?
Aang is also wrapping up a letter-writing campaign on this issue this week. She's collecting letters to be forwarded to Education Minister David Egan. We've got a link up on the Lighthouse News homepage if you'd like to take part in that. And finally, the first ever God and Government Youth Conference is kicking off in Ottawa today. We need a law director. Mike Schutten's been helping to organize this.
The past couple of years that we've done the G&G, there's always been a few young people that attend. And last year, we had a trial process whereby we took in some students from Southern Ontario, just took them on a few tours of Parliament Hill, the Supreme Court, etc. And that sort of sowed the seeds for this year, which is let's have one dedicated to youth and hopefully set the stage for these young people to either pursue careers in politics or careers in advocacy organizations. Or if not that, just realize the importance of our calling to be a salt and a light in the culture here in Canada.
There's just shy of 30 students participating, and Schutten says they've got a full agenda.
Each morning, speakers are going to come into the Ottawa office to talk on everything from pornography to preborn human rights to sphere sovereignty. And then in the afternoons, we have meetings with numerous members of parliament from each political party, actually, which is really neat. And then there will also be tours of the Supreme Court, as well as sit-ins with committee meetings. And interestingly enough, the Justice Committee, I think, is going to be debating Bill C-16. So we're hoping to be able to get a few of the groups into those committee meetings.
The kids have also been invited to participate in Thursday's National March for Life on Parliament Hill. Back with more after this.
Bill 89, the bill that challenges parental authority and pushes gender ideology in child services, is working its way through the Ontario legislature with very little opposition. Download a petition and collect signatures from your family, friends, and neighbors, and send it to your MPP. It is important that they hear from you that this is not what Ontario families want or need. Visit arpacanada.ca/bill89 to print the petition today.
And we're back on the program. Ted Byfield, you've heard the name. He was the publisher of Western Report and Alberta Report magazine back in the late 70s all the way to the early 90s. He was involved in the formation of the Reform Party back in that period. He's the man widely credited with first coining the phrase, "the West wants in." Ted Byfield, for a lot of Western Canadians at least, is an icon of the modern conservative movement. He's a few years shy of 90 years old now, and this week he's our special guest on Lighthouse News. We reached him by telephone at his home in Edmonton. Mr. Byfield, I don't say this to too many guests, but it really is an honor to have you on the program.
Well, as long as I don't start believing that, I suppose it's okay.
I'd like to start by asking you about a series of blog posts you've been writing on the controversies in the Alberta education system. And I'd ask you, what's actually going on there? I mean, we know in a sense what's going on with the promotion of the so-called alternative lifestyles and gender issues and such. That's the political reality. But what's underlying all of this? Is it just because the NDP has a different worldview? Or is there an underlying philosophical and societal shift on these moral questions?
Well, what's underlying it, as I try to make out in a little book I published not long ago, was a revolution that nobody in the media covered. And it was probably the most important revolution insofar as the Western world's concerned in the 20th century. That was in our educational system. And very succinctly, you'd have to say they switched from objectivism to subjectivism. That is where the educator, the teacher, used to have a body of skills and information that he or she had to impart to the pupil. It became a question of imparting to the pupil a certain attitude so that feelings became more important than facts. And this permeated the entire educational system over the latter half of the 20th century and resulted in the feminist revolution, for example, a sexual revolution. They're all all sort of the children of that educational revolution, which nobody covered at all. If you go back over the press coverage of that one, there's hardly any mention of it. So occasionally some editor will write an editorial deploring something they're doing in the schools, but nobody put all the pieces together. Then what they were doing in the schools was radically changing society. And that revolution is what's causing the symptoms that you notice socially, we all do.
So how should Christians respond to what's going on? I mean, you know, it seems that conservatives, especially social conservatives, are always fighting a rear guard action on this stuff, trying to make up for lost time and playing defense. Is there a way to get proactive on this stuff?
Yes, of course there is, and that is to get into two things: the media, the general media, not the religious media, the general media, and also the education system. The way that some parents are very effectively reacting have had quite a bit to do with the homeschool movement, because we are running a program that involves it. When you see how much better a mother can do with her three or four kids than a teacher with 30 or 40 students, so a kid that's being homeschooled has a high value education that is only recognized when you figure out he can write and he can understand grammar and he's good in maths and this kind of thing. That's where the fruition occurs. But that's one thing we can do. And the other thing to do is do exactly what you're doing. Get into the media. You know, young kids starting out who have a religious vocation immediately think of becoming a pastor or something like that. And heaven knows we need good pastors. But we also need good journalists, and we also need good playwrights that can get into the public mix and write things and produce things that are going to cause people to say, I better take a look at this Christianity thing. That's what we should be stirring up in the public mind. And I see young people coming out of the system now, many as homeschoolers, some from Christian schools, who are going to be able to do that, and we should give them every possible encouragement.
Would you include in that the notion that we need more Christian politicians?
I think that politics is in itself a very dicey thing for any Christian, because our system, and it's, I think, the best there is built on compromise. Christianity says these statements are true, and if you're being called upon to compromise truth, then you're compromising your religion to some degree, and very few politicians are prepared to say, this is where I stand. If you don't like it, vote me out of office. A few do, but most haven't got the courage to do that, and you can hardly blame them, because the media will do everything possible to kill them.
And that leads to something else. To close the interview, I want to shift gears a little. It's not every day we get to speak to you, and I don't want to let this opportunity pass without asking your impressions of the federal conservative leadership race. What do you think of the crop of candidates that's there?
To tell you the truth, Al, I have hardly followed it, mainly because we are so preoccupied in Alberta with this provincial government we've managed to elect that it takes the center of our attention away from Ottawa to a large degree and focuses upon what's going on here in our own backyard.
Okay, so you haven't really been paying attention, but some people have described this leadership race as a battle for the soul of the party, a battle between social conservatives and fiscal conservatives. What's your thought on that?
Well, the divide between what they call social conservatives and fiscal conservatives is phony. The fiscal conservatives seem to think that they're not dealing with moral questions, they're dealing with practical fact. And then in the next breath they say, why do people so easily involve themselves in these enormous debts? We shouldn't be doing that. That word shouldn't means morality, because using your head and being wise with money is a virtue. Now, if you discredit all the social virtues, sex and that kind of thing, because they don't matter anymore, don't be surprised when all the fiscal virtues disappear as well, because they're all standing on the same ground. So what we see is people dismissing the social conservatives as irrelevant and then whining because we allow the debts to go so high. Well, they're going so high because the same disbelief that enabled us to reject the old sex rules also enabled us to reject the economic rules. They're all standing on the same ground. I ought to, I should, we ought to. We ought not to be building up debts like this. They're all moral values. And if you discredit morality, don't be surprised if it spreads into areas you take as sacrosanct. So we should get rid of the idea of social conservatives and fiscal conservatives. What they've got to conserve is good and bad, and it applies in both regions.
Sir, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.